We're discussing NOAA's winter outlook and what its modeling looks like over the next few months. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here. So the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration provides these seasonal predictions for temperature, for precipitation, drought. What do you predict for this winter's weather? Are you concerned Wisconsin will get blasted by a polar vortex type situation? It's 800-642-1234 for your questions. Barbara Mays Bousted is a meteorologist and instructor for the National Weather Service and a contributing author to the Midwest and Northern Plains chapters of the 4th National Climate Assessment. Barb, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's tackle NOAA's winter outlook. What were some of your major takeaways for their long-range forecast?
So the NOAA outlook for the winter is based pretty strongly on two things this year. And the first is the presence of a La Nina, which is a pattern that we can predict to some extent through the winter and can tip our odds a bit for weather conditions across the country. And the second is the patterns that are associated with climate change. So the outlooks come to us based mostly on those two things because they're the things that we can predict going into the winter.
So those are your two, those two variables really help you then predict through your modeling what we can expect. Going back to La Nina, remind us what is a La Nina and how it affects our weather patterns.
Absolutely. So a La Nina indicates that the temperatures in the Pacific Ocean near the equator are cooler than normal. And those cooler than normal temperatures out in the Central Pacific can and in the Eastern Pacific can change the jet stream. And the jet stream is the river that carries all of these weather patterns toward the northern part of the United States through the winter. So when that gets affected, it moves around the different weather patterns. And there are lots of things out there, lots of named signals that can also affect the patterns. This one just happens to be one that is predictable. And in a La Nina winter, there's a tendency for some parts of the Northwest US to be a little cooler than normal, maybe a little stormier than normal. And is a tendency for parts of the Southern US, like the Southern Plains and the Gulf Coast, to maybe go dry, perhaps to have above normal temperatures. In the Great Lakes area and the Midwest, we are kind of on the edge of the influence of La Nina, but we can see temperatures tilting a little bit above normal or a little below, depending on the year. We also can see that precipitation tend to increase in the north, including in Wisconsin, too.
Barb, what about the impact of climate change? What do you see there?
Climate change has some of its strongest impacts in the seasons that are cold and in the places that are cold. So it's why climate change is affecting Alaska more strongly than Hawaii. It's affecting Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, perhaps more strongly than it's affecting Alabama and Mississippi as well. So in the winters, we are seeing temperatures that are trending warmer, and that's a measurable impact that we've been able to see using a long-term temperature record. The precipitation impacts are a little bit interesting because, well, even if you warm up the temperatures in Wisconsin in the winter, it's still pretty cold, right? It's just a little bit less below freezing, but it's probably still below freezing. So precipitation is kind of tipping a little bit higher in the winter too, which can mean that it's more likely to snow. It sounds a little backwards when you're thinking climate change and warming, but it turns out that because you can increase that chance for precipitation and Wisconsin's cold, even if you warm it up a little, that tips the odds a little bit toward that increase of snowfall, at least for a while.
But that would also alleviate some of the drought conditions.
It could, absolutely. Certainly a wet winter can help. What really alleviates drought is precipitation that can get into the ground. And in the winter, you know, that precipitation is a lot lower than other times of year, mm-hmm. and it doesn't always get into the ground. It sometimes runs into the rivers and runs away. So what we need is for that to stick around, get into the ground during the thaw, and maybe get some spring precipitation too.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Barb Mays, Bausted meteorologist and instructor for the National Weather Service. We're discussing weather forecasting models, predictions for our Midwest winter, and NOAA's outlook. You can join in with your questions. What do you predict for this winter's weather? And what questions do you have about how meteorologists do their job? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Joe now in Eau Claire. Hi, Joe. What is your question?
Hey, question is, what does your guest think about the Midwest, especially the Great Lakes region? How might we fare in the worst of the worst of the climate catastrophes, considering our natural resources and
considering our where we are positioned and the impacts we're seeing now from climate change, how might it that affect us here in Wisconsin and the Midwest? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, compared to the rest of the country.
Okay. Barb, are we somewhat insulated, or will we feel the effects all the same?
I think everybody's going to feel the effects. It's just a matter of how. If we look ahead to climate change predictions, and Joe, you mentioned specifically sort of the most extreme of those predictions. Certainly, warming is a continued pattern, and not just in the winter, but in all months. So in the summer, heat could be more of a challenge in Wisconsin than it has been. Usually, Wisconsin's not where you think of when you think of strong heat waves, but that's something that could creep in. Also, precipitation is trending higher, which is good and bad. Precipitation, being wet enough does help. That excess of wet, though, is always a problem and a concern. So it sets up, the potential for increased flooding in the area, perhaps the potential for washing out some of our infrastructure, bridges and roads that then cost money to rebuild. And when you change the temperature and moisture profiles, you change what kind of plants thrive and what kind of creatures follow them. So it may change the animal patterns. It may introduce pests that had not been introduced into Wisconsin before. I don't know about you, but wet and warm in the summer sounds to me like mosquito weather.
it infiltrates ecosystem. It has a change on the whole ecosystem.
Absolutely. Everything sort of feeds back too, right? So as you change the composition of what can grow and thrive, you change a bit of how the landscape responds to the moisture and to the heat too.
As we enter winter here, we still have memories of that polar vortex year and just, what happened. Was that an anomaly, or will we see those types of temperatures again?
It is, it's Wisconsin, right? It's kind of a far north climate in the United States. So it is very likely as we go forward that there will still be these cold winters and very cold outbreaks in the area. The polar vortex is always there. It's always present up at the North Pole. And it goes through phases too. It goes through strong phases where everything kind of stays up there and stays locked away. Mm-hmm. And it goes through weak phases where it wobbles and weaves and it drops these sort of low pressure systems down into different parts of either our country or Europe. And it's a little bit of a matter of luck where those set up, or a little bit of randomness. But when they do come across the United States, they will definitely continue to bring that cold and snowy weather. There is some research out there too about the relationship between climate change and the polar vortex. Some indications perhaps that climate change weakens the polar vortex, making these cold outbreaks more likely to occur. Again, it sounds backwards, right? Climate change should be warming, but it brings these chances for the big swings too, the big extremes.
If you're just joining us, we're discussing winter season predictions with National Weather Service meteorologist instructor Barb Mays Bausted. How much faith do you have in weather forecasts? Do you use these forecasts to plan trips? What questions do you have for a Midwestern meteorologist? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing long-range models and NOAA's winter outlook through February on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Due to La Nina conditions, as we've been talking about, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration predicts that will lean toward above average temps for most of Wisconsin. That's quite squishy, by the way. Your questions for the meteorologist, 800-642-1234. Barb Mays-Bousted stays with us. Barb, you know, you're an instructor for the National Weather Service. You train future meteorologists. What is that training like? How has it evolved?
Thank you for asking. Our training is in a lot of the aspects of what we do in our weather offices. So we're training our forecasters how to issue tornado warnings, how to adapt to changes in our severe thunderstorm warnings, how to incorporate new information when creating winter weather forecasts, and a little bit about climate too. We do train about climate. So we have been very fortunate to have a lot of technological advances in the last few years that let us push our knowledge forward and our ability to serve our public forward. And now advances in the science, too, that help us, do better, make more accurate forecasts, give better lead time, and communicate them more clearly.
It seems like when we see meteorologists, they have so many computer monitors in front of them, and it's very colorful as they look at all of these models. I would imagine technology has changed a lot.
You know, the advance in computing power is one of the biggest advances in meteorology. The more powerful that computers are at an accessible price, the more we can run our forecast models more often with, finer and finer resolution of detail and further out into the future. And that just gives us more information. You know, 15 or 20 years ago, when we were making our forecasts, we'd look at a few models and put together what they were telling us and try to come up with the solution that we thought was maybe most reasonable. And now we have so many models that we lump them together and call them an ensemble. Mm-hmm. And we look at what this ensemble tells us, the collection. It can tell us, what most of the solutions lean toward. It can tell us what the way outliers are, which gives us an idea of, the range of possibilities for something. They can tell us if the models are looking at maybe two solutions and there isn't really like a middle average that they're leaning toward, a two camp type idea.
Wow. We heard from Don in Mequon, called in, couldn't stay with us. Don wants to know, why are we getting less snow? Because when Don sees pictures from the 1950s, there seems to be a whole lot more snow.
It's, the weather we remember is based just as much on our perceptions as it is on the measurements that are available. So in Wisconsin, in most places, the amount of snowfall through the winter seasons is actually either stable or maybe even trending a little upward. But what he might be seeing is that a lot of those early season precipitation events maybe struggle to fall as snow more now because that season is warming up. Maybe some of the spring events also do the same thing because those shoulder seasons are warming up a little bit and precipitation that was already just barely snow perhaps now falls as rain. But it's also possible that Wisconsin's getting, as many of the big snow events as they used to.
Our memories make such an impact on us. Barb, what do you hope and expect in the future as science and technology continues to improve in meteorology? What is on the horizon?
Our advances in science are really pushing the forefront of what we are able to forecast, and I hope we can continue to get more and more refined about, for instance, diagnosing which storms have tornadoes and which don't, or diagnosing exactly where that little band of snow that's so narrow is going to set up with enough notice that people can do some preparation for it. I also think that a lot of our advances are going to come on the receiving side of forecasts, that we're doing pretty well with the science. Let's continue to improve with how we talk about it and how we communicate the range of possibilities, how we reach out to our partners and to our public and say, here's what we think is coming, or here are some possibilities of what's coming, so that they can make the decisions they need to make to live their lives.
I also noticed that weather apps on our phones have become so much more data-driven and sophisticated. It's almost like data overload. I mean, it's telling me so much.
Yeah. Yes, and I think a lot of meteorologists would agree. There is a lot of data out there. There is so much data in the cloud, data coming into our streams. It is a lot of information to process and take in. Mm-hmm. And we have computing help with that, right, that takes in and processes some of that data for us. But it is a wealth of information. And almost like being a meteorologist, folks who are just looking at their apps, instead of getting their one channel they used to watch, may have 10 different forecasts coming at them. And they have to decide, okay, you know, what are the collection of them say? Or is there one I trust more than another? And that's the source I'm going to listen to and, you know, filter it in a way that makes sense to them.
Barb, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I always enjoy talking about climate and weather and where they meet.
Barb Mays Bousted is a meteorologist and instructor for the National Weather Service. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. This year marks the program's 10th anniversary on WPR. As part of the celebration, we're sharing some of our favorite stories. Here is producer Steve Gotcher with a story about musician Joni Mitchell's time in Madison.
This story brings together a midwinter ice storm, the southeast shore of Lake Mendota in Madison, ice skating, and a series of photographs that became a record album cover. Dean Robbins takes us back in time to a cold February photo session on the bleak frozen lake.
I remember the 1970s as a time of journeys. College kids like me were forever on the road to discovery, whether hitchhiking or exploring our inner selves. That's why we idolize Joni Mitchell.
I'm traveling in some vehicle. I'm sitting in some cafe.
Like us, this eccentric singer-songwriter was on a quest. We followed her progress from the open-hearted folky of Chelsea Morning to the jaded romantic of Blue to the brash pop star of Help Me. In 1976, Mitchell's wanderlust brought her to Madison in a spontaneous photo shoot on Lake Mendota. Months later, the photographs appeared on an album jacket, encapsulating both Joni's career and the self-analytical post-hippie era she ruled over. Mitchell came to Madison for a February concert at the Dane County Coliseum in the midst of an ice storm. She'd just broken up with her longtime boyfriend and called off the rest of her troubled tour, so her emotional state was melancholy in the extreme. Gazing at frozen Lake Mendota from the Edgewater Hotel, she felt the call of the glassy white void. She could hear tree branches cracking under the weight of the ice, a sound reminiscent of tinkling glass. Mitchell went into town to buy a pair of skates, choosing men's black to match her mournfulness. She donned a long black skirt and a black ermine cape and leaped onto the ice. The surface was dangerously spongy. Freezing cold water splashed onto Joni's face, leaving welts. But she felt compelled to go through with her mad plan. Her photographer followed along to record the strange scene. Mitchell was surprised to find that her cape acted as a sort of sail. She spread her arms and let the wind carry her, looking like a crow in flight. The photographs captured a mystical moment, an artist on an unearthly journey, destination unknown and arrival uncertain. Joni liked the photos so much that she used them for black and white montages on her album Hegira. The title is an Arabic word meaning journey, and the wintry images fit perfectly with the musical message. Chilled by jazz rock guitar, the songs are less melodies than moods. They're less pop than poetry. In Coyote, Amelia, and other meandering masterpieces, Mitchell evokes the restlessness of the road, mirroring the restlessness of her soul. Jaco Pastorius's prodding bass seems like a stand-in for the psychic obsession she can't let go of. Rolling Stone picked Hegira's cover as one of the best ever. But for a Madison resident, it has special meaning. It shows us that frozen Lake Mendota is not just a place for casual recreational activities. It can also be something far more mysterious, an expanse of endless possibility.
you still have your music. And I've still got my eyes on the land and the sky. You sing for your friends and your family. I'll walk green pastures by and by.
Dean Robbins is a journalist and author based in Madison. He's won state and national awards for arts, features, and news stories, and has contributed to magazines and newspapers around the country. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Steve Gotcher.
And ahead this hour, you have a line to Attorney General Josh Call. What questions do you have for the state's top law enforcement official? What public safety effort could reduce violent crime where you are? Join in 800-642-1234. News update is next here on the Ideas Network.